It's Friday, February 9th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Doug Bernard. Coming up, old allegations of spousal abuse lead to new questions about the future of a key White House figure. The Olympics begin in Pyeongchang, and the singer Drake spread some love in Miami.
Drake went into the Sabor Tropical supermarket and paid everybody's groceries. Apparently, there were about 60 people in the grocery store at the time, and Drake said, just go ahead and fill up your carts. Today, it's on me. And his grocery bill reportedly came out to about $50,000.
That and more ahead this next half hour. We begin today with a troubling story of domestic abuse, which has quickly evolved into a political scandal at the White House. Thursday was the last day of work for White House Staff Secretary Rob Porter. He resigned his post earlier this week after old allegations of spousal abuse from two of his ex-wives resurfaced in the media. Porter denies the allegations. As Staff Secretary, Porter became one of President Trump's most trusted aides and was well regarded by his boss, White House Chief of Staff John Kelly. In fact, as the allegations resurfaced, Kelly not once but twice offered praise for Porter's integrity and character. Only after it became clear those comments were politically tone-deaf did Kelly renounce Porter. In a rare admission of error, White House Deputy Press Secretary Raj Shah on Thursday said, quote, we could have all done better in handling Porter's case.
It's important to remember that Rob Porter has repeatedly denied these allegations and done so publicly. That doesn't change how serious and disturbing these allegations are. They're upsetting. And the background check investigates both the allegations and the denials. The investigation does not stop when allegations come to light. It continues to determine the truth.
Joining us on the line now is VOA White House correspondent Pete Heinlein. Pete, you were at the briefing today. Did Raj Shah, do you think, put this controversy to bed?
He was conciliatory, admitting that the White House could have done better than it did. That's rare at a White House that is known for not apologizing for anything. But it was one of those incidents over the last couple of days that somewhat caught the White House off guard by surprise. Rob Porter is sort of a darling within the White House. He's a tall, handsome fellow who's a Oxford and Harvard educated lawyer. He is dating Hope Hicks, the White House communications director, who is a very close and longtime aide to Donald Trump and the Trump family. And this has been, inside the White House, something of a Camelot. Rob Porter is highly loved. He's considered extremely competent. Donald Trump likes him. Chief of Staff John Kelly likes him. So when this initially broke, it came from a British tabloid, the Daily Mail, and I don't think they realized how serious it was. As we know, Sarah Sanders came out yesterday and basically said he's a wonderful fellow, and we're going to take a look more closely at this. John Kelly issued a statement, too, which we believe was written partly by Hope Hicks.
It seemed in the briefing that not only was there a lot of question about, who this guy is, but to borrow an old phrase from Watergate, what did somebody know and when did they know it? Specifically, John Kelly, the chief of staff, lots of questioning about whether Mr. Kelly knew, even partially knew, that this was in Mr. Porter's background, but yet still kept him on, even though the FBI wouldn't grant him, kind of full top secret clearance.
Yes, of course. It came out in the wash here that Porter had not been granted a security clearance, and that the reason was that the FBI was talking to his two ex-wives and looking into the allegations they had made, which are pretty serious allegations. And together with that photograph, they make a very strong case that Rob Porter was probably not employable anymore in the White House.
Yeah.
Then the question is, as you point out, when did John Kelly know, and when did he know it? He changed his statement, or I should say he amended his statement afterward, later on in the day yesterday, saying, I was shocked by these new allegations. There is no place for domestic violence in our society. And whereas Sarah Sanders had said yesterday that he would stay on, Rob Porter would stay on until a replacement was found, today Raj Shah said he was terminated yesterday. He's picking up his stuff today, and he's finished.
Yeah.
So you can see the White House is certainly trying to backtrack. But when did John Kelly know what he knows now? And he may face some pretty strong opposition. You can see it coming from Capitol Hill already, where Republicans and Democrats alike are saying, if he was aware of this and didn't do anything, he probably has to go.
Okay, thanks, Pete. VOA White House correspondent Pete Heinlein.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Welcome back to International Edition, coming to you live from Washington, D.C. I'm Doug Bernard. U.S. Vice President Mike Pence has assured South Korea that the United States will stand with its allies to bring, quote, maximum pressure on North Korea to end its nuclear and ballistic missile program. Pence arrived in South Korea on Thursday to counter North Korea's Olympic charm offensive in ways that could create a rift with South Korea's engagement efforts. VOA White House correspondent Steve Herman is traveling with the vice president. He spoke with our Sarah Williams.
In the words of the vice president, the United States stands shoulder to shoulder with South Korea. That's a phrase we've heard for a long time. And what both of the leaders are emphasizing is that their goal is to eliminate the nuclear weapons program from North Korea. Of course, this is all happening at a very interesting time with South Korea hosting the Olympics and athletes from North Korea coming, and also some high-level dignitaries from Pyongyang, including the sister of leader Kim Jong-un. And there is a possibility, which Vice President Pence and others have acknowledged, that there could be some sort of meeting between one of the North Korean officials and Vice President Pence. They keep saying, we'll see what happens. And so they're definitely not ruling it out, although both Pyongyang and Washington are saying they're not asking for a meeting with each other.
Yeah, and Mr. Pence has warned against, I believe, what he terms as the charm offensive by North Korea. And he also spoke to U.S. troops in Japan earlier in the day. And what did he tell them?
Well, that was a really tough speech. And speaking to a hangar full of U.S. service personnel, where he was flanked by a couple of F-35 stealth fighter jets from the U.S. Air Force, the vice president talked essentially about being prepared for any eventuality. And I asked the vice president following that speech if that address was intended to prepare American servicemen and women for war. And he paused for a couple of seconds before he answered. He had a long indirect answer, but he did use that phrase that we have heard again and again in recent months, that, quote, all options are on the table.
This is all occurring as the same day North Korea held a military parade in Pyongyang. It's an interesting time to have a military parade as the Olympics are preparing to begin.
Yeah, this, according to Pyongyang, was tied to an anniversary of its army. But obviously, coming on the same day that the first athletic competitions were happening in South Korea at the Olympics, it definitely helped to take some of the focus off of what was happening in the South. And as we've seen time and time again, North Korea always wants to have attention paid to it. And the United States talks about maximum pressure. Well, North Korea, through its provocative actions for some years, has also, in a sense, been applying maximum pressure.
VOA White House correspondent Steve Herman reporting from Seoul, South Korea. Well, staying in Korea for the moment, on Friday, Vice President Mike Pence will attend the opening ceremonies in Pyeongchang with Fred Warmbier as his special guest. Warmbier is the father of Otto Warmbier, an American student who was jailed in North Korea and who died last year after returning to the United States. Meanwhile, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's sister, Kim Yo-jong, will also attend the Games. She's the highest-ranked North Korean official and the first member of the Kim family to ever visit South Korea. South Korean President Moon Jae-in is expected to meet North Korean ceremonial head of state Kim Yong-nam and Kim Yo-jong on Saturday. At the State Department on Thursday, spokeswoman Heather Nauert said that the United States and South Korea share the same goals, and that North Korea will not be able to drive a wedge between the two longtime allies.
Do we sometimes approach things differently from a different mindset? Well, absolutely, of course we do. Think about the proximity of South Korea to North Korea. Think about what that country has been through. Think about the story that happened back in 1988 when a plane was exploded and South Koreans died. It is no wonder that its citizens would be naturally concerned about the threat that is right at their doorstep. The United States will not back away from its ally, and no one is going to drive a wedge between the United States and the Republic of Korea and the United States and also Japan.
President Moon is having to maintain a delicate balance between his efforts to reach out to Pyongyang and the maximum pressure policy of the United States. For some perspective, we reached out to Patrick Cottrell, who worked at the U.S. State Department's Bureaus of Political, Military Affairs, and Nonproliferation. He now teaches at Linfield College in Oregon. Cottrell said that the Olympics offer a unique opportunity for dialogue.
It's an accessible and very high-profile event. More states participate in the winter and summer games than belong to the United Nations, for example. And studies have shown in the past that up to 90% of the world's television sets will turn into some part of the Olympics. And secondly, you have the obvious symbolism of peace and cooperation, the five rings, and so forth. And so it does provide a great, what scholars might call a political opportunity for folks wanting to make a political statement or achieve some sort of political goal. I think it remains to be seen, obviously. But on one hand, think about the Republic of Korea. President Moon's decision to have North Korea join in the Games and these joint statements, as you mentioned, wasn't necessarily popular in all of Korea. But if you look at the broader saber rattling with the United States, it does provide an opportunity for perhaps a diplomatic warming to occur when it otherwise wouldn't, when a key ally of Korea, the United States, for all these years, seems to be going in a different direction than it has been in the past.
We also spoke with Andy Spaulding, a professor at the University of Richmond Law School. He told our David Byrd that much of the saber rattling by North Korea is not directed at Seoul as much as it is at Washington.
To South Koreans, they really think of the North and South as one people artificially divided by this national boundary that really shouldn't exist, that is an accident of history. And so they are politically, the movement is to reach out to North Korea, and they're much less threatened by North Korea than we Americans are. And so I interpret much of the saber rattling from North Korea as directed as to the United States, but not directed to South Korea.
And President Moon is expected to have a meal with Kim Jong-un's sister, who is also going to be attending the opening ceremonies with Vice President Pence.
Yes, I think there are a number of gestures like this that are significant, that are very symbolic. Remember when Seoul hosted the Summer Olympics in 1988, North Korea boycotted. What we have this year instead is we have the two countries marching under a common flag. We have them fielding a joint women's hockey team. So we're definitely in an era of at least increasing symbolic gestures between North and South. And we have to see those as very different from the increasing tensions between North Korea and the United States.
And Vice President Pence said in Japan earlier Thursday that all options remain on the table and that the United States will not allow North Korea to use the Olympics to paper over its human rights record or its record on nuclear technology.
Yeah, it's hard not to think of most of what comes out of this administration as just blustering. No one would think that because North Korea is reaching out to South Korea that we're going to look the other way at their various governance failings. But we all have to agree that to the extent that North Korea opens itself to dialogue with the South Korea, that's only going to be better for its own internal governance conditions. So it's going to tend to put pressure on North Korea to address its shortcomings. And so if we were being honest, we would say that the gestures between North and South Korea are plainly good in the name of promoting the rule of law and transparency and prosperity. And what the United States is doing to irritate North Korea is a different thing altogether.
Andy Park is a professor at the University of Richmond Law School. He's also the author of Olympic Anti-Corruption Report, Brazil and the Rio 2016 Games.
This is Science in a Minute.
A machine that can read minds might be more at home in a science fiction movie, but researchers using a magnetic resonance device read the minds of volunteers to determine what song they were listening to. Scientists at Brazil's De Ouro Institute for Research and Education selected 6 volunteers and had them listen to 40 pieces of classical music, rock, pop, jazz, and other genres while connected to the MR device. The machine captured the neural fingerprint of each song on the volunteer's brain, while a computer, using this data, learned to identify the brain patterns produced by each musical selection. Given a choice between 2 songs, the computer, with 85% accuracy, was able to correctly identify the song the participants were listening to based on the brain activity. Researchers plan to find out what makes some people love a song while others don't. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Welcome back to VOA's International Edition. Hundreds of protesters marched in Kenya's capital Thursday to demand greater diversity in President Uhuru Kenyatta's cabinet picks. Activists are calling on Parliament to reject the nominees and for Mr. Kenyatta to nominate more women, youth, and members of marginalized groups. Ryle Umbor reports for VOA from Nairobi.
The protesters carried signs that read, "Recall the List," as they marched to Parliament in Nairobi. They are demanding that the recently re-elected President Uhuru Kenyatta revise his list of cabinet nominees to make it more inclusive. 6 of the 21 nominees on the current list are women. No youth, defined as people between ages 18 and 35, were nominated. Activists say only one person with a disability has been nominated. Sabeti Mboga, a disabled mother of 3, joined the march. I am here to protest because the government does not recognize us. We also want to be involved in the process of governance like anybody else. The protesters say Kenyatta is seeking to reward ruling party loyalists. Mercy Jelimo is a leadership and governance officer at the Center for Rights Education and Awareness.
Today we are going to Parliament. This is our form of presentation of our memorandum to the Committee on Appointments. As they vet the cabinet nominees, we are there to express our dissatisfaction with the list.
In early January, Kenyatta came under fire from gender activists for announcing a partial list of nominees that included no women. He released a full list on January 26th. The president has not responded to criticism of his cabinet picks. The issue is re-emerging amid a tense political climate. Kenyatta's government is drawing criticism for its arrest of three people who took part in the mock presidential inauguration of opposition leader Raila Odinga on January 30th, and for its temporary shutdown of three TV stations that tried to cover the event. The Interior Minister said the government acted to prevent violence. Rights groups say authorities are trampling on the constitution and defying court orders. Jimmy Eddy, a member of Team Courage, a local activist group, marched Thursday with other demonstrators.
We have seen the media being under siege of lately. We have also seen arrest of various people, including deportation. How do you deport your child from your house?
Odinga rejected the results of the October presidential runoff election, which he boycotted, and has called for a fresh vote in August. One of the three opposition figures arrested over the swearing-in ceremony arrived in Canada Thursday after being deported, according to local media. Miguna Miguna is a leader of Odinga's National Resistance Movement. In a statement, the Interior Ministry said Miguna's Kenyan citizenship has been revoked. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program, Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and The Voice of America.
One of contemporary music's biggest artists, Drake, has had one of the biggest weeks of his career so far. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald told our Jim Stevenson that Drake is sharing his good fortune with high school students and grocery store shoppers alike.
We love good news. We love big news. We love big weeks. Things are happening for Drake.
Drake, and I mean, it doesn't get any bigger than Drake. And he is having a big week on the chart. For the second time in 2 years, Drake has put two singles in the top 10 of the Hot 100 chart at the same time.
Mm.
And he's the only artist to ever do that. I mean, other acts have done it once, but Drake's done it twice, last April and then now. He's also giving plenty of money to charity. On Monday, he donated $25,000 to Miami Senior High School in Miami, Florida. And he gave students clothes from his OVO brand. He also gave one of the students, Destiny Paris James, $50,000 toward her tuition at the University of Miami. And then the next day, he stopped by the Lotus House Shelter for Women and Children in Miami and donated $50,000. He handed out toys and games to the kids along with $150 Target gift cards for female residents. And Lotus House management went on Twitter to say that Drake's donation will help them feed all who need it, and that this year they will serve 500,000 meals in their new kitchen. So
wow.
There is definitely a need for all of this money. It's definitely not wasted.
Mm-hmm.
And then later in the day on Tuesday, Drake went into the Sabor Tropical supermarket and paid everybody's groceries. Apparently, there were about 60 people in the grocery store at the time, and Drake said, just go ahead and fill up your carts. Today, it's on me. And his grocery bill reportedly came out to about $50,000.
Wow.
So this is all wonderful, but there is an ulterior motive here, or a suspected ulterior motive. Drake is believed to be filming these charitable visits for the upcoming video for his number one single, God's Plan. Mm. But that still doesn't take away from the fact that he really helped a lot of people down in Miami this week.
That's what you call paying it forward and also setting an example, because people can presumably watch this video and in their own small way maybe emulate what he did.
I think that's absolutely the intent.
We applaud his generosity and efforts, and as we always are the recipients of a lot of generosity from Ray McDonald each and every week.
Because, I'm a giver.
Yeah, you are. You bestow upon us the Top 20 Countdown. What could be better than that? Catch it on VOA 1. Catch Ray on Twitter.
At Ray on the Hits.
Thank you, Ray.
You got it.
Yeah. I've been moving calm, don't start no trouble with me. Trying to keep it peaceful is a struggle for me.
And many thanks for joining us for International Edition here on VOA. Coming up next, the latest world news, so stay tuned for that. For all of us in Studio 25, Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Patrick Dea, I'm Doug Bernard. Have a great weekend.
An editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States condemns the reported arrests of at least 29 protesters in Iran for exercising their human rights and fundamental freedoms by standing up against the compulsory hijab imposed upon women. U.S. Department of State spokesperson Heather Nauert wrote in a statement that the United States remains steadfast in our support for the rights to freedom of religion, freedom of expression, and peaceful assembly. President Donald Trump has said that the Iranian people are the source of one of the greatest fears of the Iranian government. That fear has been shown once again by the regime's reaction to women who protest the compulsory wearing of the hijab. Images and videos of unveiled Iranian women standing up and waving their hijab are spreading across social media. Some men and veiled women have also protested the compulsory hijab. They are motivated and inspired by the action of a young Iranian woman who stood on a box in Enghelab or Revolution Street in Tehran prior to the massive anti-government protests that started at the end of December. Omid Memarian, a U.S.-based Iranian journalist who was once imprisoned in Iran, wrote on social media that the fight against forced hijab is not about whether the hijab is good or bad. It's about choice and equality. As the U.S. Department of State's 2016 Human Rights Report noted, Iranian women's rights are restricted in virtually all areas of society. Not only must they adhere to the compulsory hijab, but their testimony is given half the weight of a man's in a court of law. They may not transmit citizenship to their children or to a non-citizen spouse. They are barred from running for high political office. Social and legal restraints limit their educational and professional opportunities, and they are punished disproportionately for certain crimes. The women of Iran deserve better. They deserve to be accorded their full fundamental human rights, as the current protests over the compulsory hijab underscore. In State Department spokesperson Nauert's words, "People should be free to choose the clothes they wear and practice their faith as they desire. Depriving individuals of this choice undermines their autonomy and dignity."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.